Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Indeed, here we are, and Bob, 100th show. Pretty big deal, right? Oh, yes, of course.
Unbelievable.
Well, give your usual. Why is Bob so low? Bob doesn't sound loud enough to me. Yeah, I'm not sure, but give us the usual entry, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the iPhone, get Grandma out of the spare room, and let's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
For those of you on Facebook, we welcome you. The call number, if you want to call to us directly, is 323-649-8268. Again, this is the Bob Forrest, hashtag you live, and we have a very special guest today. Bob, I'm going to let you do the introduction.
Wow. Elvis is actually here in a spare room also, so we should... And he would not have survived had it not been for this lady.
Aww.
Because we weren't...
You weren't taken to the breast. Weren't taken to the breast.
And so, but the Roberts...
So she is known. So she's known at Bob's household as a savior, but Eliza Roberts—that's who we're welcoming here.
Thank you.
And but people know her as somebody else, Bob. There's somebody other reason people might know her. Like the guy sitting next to her.
Eric Roberts?
Yes, that might have something to do with it. That might have something to do with people would know. And Eric is here also. Eric, welcome.
I'm very proud of that, by the way. I'm very proud of that.
Eric needs no introduction, I was just pushing through, thinking of the kinds of things I could say, and it's just, he's one of them.
I think it's weird, Eric, like they'll just go through the bit, you know, but I mean, it's Eric Roberts, what the fuck's the problem?
It's an adjective.
You know what he's done? It's amazing.
It is amazing. I did an interview for him last week for Vanity Fair. And the guy was so excited to be talking about Eric Roberts.
Yes.
And he's a huge fan. And, and his I could tell his thing was, I need to get Eric Roberts right in the lexicon of where he needs to be.
Exactly.
So people understand exactly what this man does.
Oh, and nice to
exactly.
Hear.
And it's great that you talked to him. Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
I wanted to talk about.
But I don't hear Bob for some reason on his mic.
Are we
anybody else having trouble with him?
I hear
Bob. Oh, yeah, Bob.
I'm going to introduce the other guests as soon as they get Bob's stuff squared.
Yeah.
Is it working or not?
I hear you in the room, but not quite
exactly.
In the
not on the mic.
Lean up on your mic, Bob. Lean up.
I'm up.
There we go.
Okay. Susan told me not to be so close to the block for the camera.
You don't need to be so close anymore.
All right.
You don't need to be so close.
So here's the thing. I had this thing happen to me about a month and a half ago. This internet kid that kind of works with me. And it's that millennials. Millennials are a real interesting bunch to me, right? So my email is cries and whispers@hotmail.com. It always has since Hotmail began.
Right.
And it's my favorite Ingmar Bergman movie. Now, when I was in college, everyone knew who Ingmar Bergman was.
Yeah.
Most people had seen that film or at least seen Wild
He only had one DP his whole movie directorial career, and I worked with him twice.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Go ahead.
I'm talking about.
Yes.
So I come from a world where everyone knows what – they may not know the movie Cries and Whispers, which is my favorite of his because it's so depressing. But they definitely – when somebody asks, why Cries and Whispers, what does that mean? You say, it's an Ingmar Bergman movie. For a decade and a half, everyone went, oh, yeah, they knew who Ingmar Bergman was.
Right.
They might not know that much about him, but they know what his movies are like.
Right.
They know – so this kid asked me a couple months ago, and I said – it's an Ingmar Bergman movie. It's one of my favorite movies from when I was a kid. I don't expect that you know who that is or what that is. And he goes, no. And then he goes into the other room at my house office.
And Googles it.
And he Googles it. Yeah. And he's reading about Ingmar Bergman, right? Yeah. And I walked in and I said, just because you read Wikipedia doesn't mean you know a fucking thing about Ingmar Bergman. Now, we're about the same age. You grew up in this world except for on the acting side.
In it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In it.
Yes.
Nobody knows anything anymore except for Marvel comic movies.
Totally true.
Doesn't it? How do you deal with that?
Well.
He puts his head down and works.
I was crushed when I learned that a movie generation is only 4 years long. It's not 20 years long like a generation is. It's 4 years long. It's from 8th to 12th grade in high school. That's the movie generation.
Is that what the marketers?
No,
the
that's business? What I say. That's what I say. A movie generation is 4 years. So you can imagine how many generations I've been through, okay?
That's interesting. That is an interesting way to look at it, though. Is that internationally the same or just here?
No, it's my understanding. Yeah. And it's what I believe. And,
it makes perfect sense, right? Yeah. I mean, when I think about seeing lots of films, that was when I saw lots of films.
That's when we all saw lots of
maybe,
films.
Maybe you're kind of college.
Everybody see all the important films, and now is everybody seeing?
All of us movie geeks did. You know, you are a bit of a movie geek.
I am.
I'm a sincere movie geek. Yes, we saw everything ever made in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
But we're unusual, buddy, and, you know. We're unusual.
Two things I want to do before I bring Keaton Simons in. Keaton is, of course, the son of these two, and he is a musician.
No. I have to correct you.
Eliza's son.
I'm a stepfather.
I was not sure if that was true or not.
I've been sleeping with his mom since he was a little bitty boy.
Well,
but
it feels like
depends on
son.
Which Wikipedia you're reading.
Okay. So they are.
Hey, millennials.
Keaton, I want to call you his son because I think it's effectively been that, and you guys are.
No, but I'm only saying that because he does have a father I know and appreciate.
Exactly.
He has a cool dad.
And Keaton has written and performed with Gnarls Barkley, Snoop, Josh Kelly. He's got a career. He's in Nashville right now. That's why we had to Zoom in with him to talk to him. How are you, my friend?
I'm so good, man. It's great to see you guys. Hi, Bob.
There you go. Howdy, howdy.
Hi, buddy.
Yeah, I can't recognize you with that John Lennon 1969 hair.
I just cut the hair off.
You just got it.
But everything's great. I'm in Nashville right now. I'm actually staying at my friend Kelly McGrath's house. Awesome artist. You guys should check her out.
We love her.
Making a record, and we're doing it Nashville style, cutting everything live. It's so great. Like, you guys are going to love this record.
Isn't it crazy, all the wild recording rooms in Nashville that have these amazing histories attached to me? Are you in any of those rooms? Or have you been
Absolutely,
in those rooms?
Yes. Yeah. I was tracking at Sound Emporium, which has been around forever. And so, I mean, all the records on the walls are just like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah,
you going around to all the clubs, the Bluebird, and going to open mic things? There's amazing stuff goes on down there.
I just popped my Bluebird cherry. I just performed for the first time at Bluebird.
Oh, my God. Good for you, man. Congratulations.
Special guest.
That's a big deal. I have to frame this because people don't know that if you're in Nashville, that it's this little restaurant that it's sort of in the round, and it's probably 200-300 people maybe, but people crammed in at night, and it's where people go to see the acts.
Oh, so well, the cool!
Songwriters. I didn't know that.
The
how
songwriters.
Cool!
Yeah. It's where the songwriters go.
Yeah.
So I was down there in the late '80s, I think, and you would go there, and somebody would say, "Get up and play a song," and then you're like looking at Guy Clark is standing there. You're like, "I don't think so."
Yeah, very talented.
If he's
people
growing up, I don't think so.
Your answer has to be yes to that kind of thing.
Keaton, is there a website people can go to look for your stuff?
You can go to KeatonSimons.com, but you can also find me on Facebook, Keaton Simons Music, and on Instagram and Twitter and stuff, it's just at Keaton Simons.
Yeah, all right.
KeatonSimons.
Right, Keaton Simons. And we saw Keaton back on Celebrity Rehab way back, and you've grown up since then. That's what the best. That's sort of what it seems like to me. So good for you, man.
Yeah.
I look more grown up because I have short hair.
You seem more grown up. You also look more grown up.
I got the short hair.
Well, I'm not sure it's the short hair.
How long ago was that now? Has that been 10 years?
2011.
It's been 5 years. 6 years.
Yeah.
We're going on 7 years.
Yeah, think how old Elvis is, your kid.
It's
been Elvis.
He's seven in a week.
That's when he was born.
Yeah,
that's
it.
That was a real high point for us, no pun intended. It was so cool, especially the involvement here with Keaton and the music.
Keaton
and
was
that
great.
Was all
very,
you know what's
amazing.
Weird is, so we got all that negative attention for all the sad stories that happened, but I kept saying, like, you don't know, there's like a bunch of happy stories too, but America doesn't like happy
they only
stories.
Write about the planes that crash, that's it. You never hear about all the flights that arrive safely.
Let me then tell you guys that it's been such an incredible life-changing experience. That was one of the most important, most incredible growth experiences of my life. And to do something like that, to do something that real in a context like that, to me was something. you know, and people come up to me still, and I've had people say, I hadn't spoken to my brother in 10 years, and I saw that, and I called him up, and we, you know, I mean,
I know
it was that kind of
thing. I'm not there because I'm making a record. Otherwise, we'd be hugging each other like crazy. Yeah. I hadn't spoken to him in 16 years before that. Thank you,
Keaton, and I hang. We're like,
you could see it coming. I saw it then, back when you guys got together.
Yeah, that was you guys.
Amazing. The affection is phenomenal.
We have real love for each other.
That's what it really did. It brought talking and talk therapy and healing and really a civil conversation about dysfunctional families into everybody's living room, and then gave examples of people they kind of look up to doing those things, saying I'm sorry or making amends or getting off drugs.
Right.
And I hear it all the time. You hear it too, don't you, Drew?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The people people told me they got sober from watching Celebrity Rehab. I'm like, how the hell is that possible? They got places all over America people are getting sober in. But no, they watched a TV show.
But I mean, the bad stories, the thing is, look at all the things that have happened, sad losses related to drugs since the show went off the air. Unless they're going to blame you guys for those too. I mean, I'm sorry. It happens. It's a fatal situation in many cases, no matter
America
how hard you
doesn't
try.
Seem to see it as a fatal disease. They just don't.
Not or a disease
they
at all
see
now.
It. They see the. They understand
they
it's fatal
choice.
If heroin gets involved.
Right, right.
That's bad people, though. That's bad people
right.
do heroin.
Those are heroin.
Good people do OxyContin.
That's right.
Civilized people alcohol. Take OxyContin.
That's right. Or an Ativan or other
right,
benzodiazepines.
Sure.
So I was doing you guys will love this. Adderall. So I was doing a group with about 30 millennials a couple of weeks ago, and something came up. One of them mentioned being on Adderall as a kid, and I said, just as a matter, just for me to know, how many people in this room, it's 25 to 30 millennials who are in treatment. I said, how many of you were on medicine when you were children for psychiatric illness or ADHD?
So scary.
27 out of 30.
Oh, my God.
I think your psychiatric community is going to have to look at that.
This is bad news. This is bad news.
All it does is prepare you to take medicine.
And now
that's
add medical marijuana to the mix.
I know.
And you got
I'm sorry.
Trouble.
Yeah, real trouble. I know. I know.
It's true.
I know.
Because the kids argue that it's natural. I go, dude, no, the THC content of the pot you're smoking isn't natural. There's nothing natural about it.
No.
That was made by Dow Chemical.
Well, it's also natural to grow in the ground, but it's not supposed to be ingested. I mean, there's a lot of natural things. Shit is natural. We're not supposed to, you know.
Uranium's natural.
Sorry,
hey,
everybody.
Said that.
She did. I love it. I will quote it. Trust me.
Please that's that Earth Mama in her.
Well, I'm still trying to get past the lactation specialist. So she's now a lactation specialist, too, amongst her other talents.
Well, that's the result. 2 years and 3 months. I was 5 months pregnant with his sister when I finally stopped nursing him.
And people, breastfeeding is unassailable as a good thing.
Yes.
But what people, you're not allowed to say that it's tough for some women to do it and some babies to do it because La Leche will come attack you if you do. And it's like, no. It's to get people to do it and not give up on it that you want the lactation specialist and the consultation and stuff.
That's right.
Because these things can be overcome. People just don't expect it to magically happen.
Totally.
Well, in our case, I just think there's not a lot of grandma to mom to granddaughter conversations about a lot of things in America. And that being one of the top tiers.
For sure. Well, because every generation they change their mind. Like my mom was horrified that I was breastfeeding, whereas her mom was horrified that she wasn't. So, you know, unfortunately you don't get your mom because they change their mind.
It's a strange right?
Just intergenerational transmission of all sorts of things is as you live, as I have lived longer, it becomes more and more distressing.
Yes.
and important.
Yes.
And I think in modern history, maybe more than ever before, because of all these shifts in technology and ideas and things and ideologies, and people get caught up in these things.
Yeah, totally.
And it's, this is not meant to be any kind of, in any way, a spiritual or religious statement, but just say, look at the ancient books and things. They pretty much had it kind of down, most of the basics.
Yeah.
They kind of had it figured out.
Yeah.
Just kind of work from that. I
always say things are getting better and worse all at the same time, and it depends on where you focus. Because now I have Sydney, one year old, and my partner nurses her all the time. Nursed her at the LA County Fair, just sitting on a bench.
Yep.
Nobody said a word.
As well
no
she should.
No covering up with something you buy at Walmart or Babies and Beyond.
Right.
Just anywhere we've gone. Hollywood Bowl.
Right.
Everywhere we've gone, no one has ever said a word.
Tell him your story.
I will. But
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas 7 years ago, people did say things.
Oh, they did.
Well, it's weird.
But then the flip side of that nursing in public is that people are also pretty much nude all the time. I mean, now you have young girls showing up on red carpets with no clothes on.
Yeah.
So I mean, and exactly. I'm not sure.
So nudity is a double standard, totally insane.
It's
vulgar. I'll never understand.
No.
Violence is not vulgar, but language is vulgar.
Right, I know. Yeah, exactly. Double standard.
It's crazy. Exactly. So things are evolving and devolving all the time.
I was with a friend at Barbara Streisand's concert, and he was with his sociotechnological adolescence.
Sorry, guys, I'm on a delay, so I'm messing it up. We are in our socio-technological adolescence right now. That's why everything's so damn awkward. A lot of good things, a lot of bad things. We're confused. Things are growing in places they didn't used to grow.
We don't know what's going to happen next.
And we'll see what happens next. But I really feel like that's the part of the curve that we're in right now.
Early adolescence.
Yeah,
that's true.
Speaking of which, Susan is monitoring our Facebook page, and by the number here is 323-649-8268 if you want to call in.
Tell your nursing story.
What were you going to say about the nursing story?
Then I have a Facebook question for Eric.
But go ahead, tell the nursing story.
Okay, just super quick because so I was flying with him to Asheville, North Carolina, to shoot.
Beautiful place.
And yes, on the plane. And I went to breastfeed him. He'd never seen a bottle in his life. And the flight attendant came. She's like, "You can't do that here." And I was like, "What?"
She said, I'll warm a bottle.
Because she was really, "I'll warm a bottle." I said, "I don't have a bottle."
Is that a Delta flight?
I don't know if there was Delta in those days. But
sure
anyway,
there was. Sure there
and
was.
So she pulls a blanket out. Well, they did used to have blankets on planes. And pulled a blanket out from over me and threw it on top of me. Cover up. Young lady, that's obscene.
Oh,
and I'm like, I'm feeding my child. But luckily, what ended up happening, and you know, takeoff and landing, you gotta, you know, for their ears.
Yeah, for the ears.
I was doing a show called Year in the Life, and I was so traumatized that I went to the audition after this. And not only did they cast me, they bought the story, and that was then the theme of an arc for the show.
Oh my God.
So thank you, flight attendant, whoever you are, you bitch.
For traumatizing. But,
you made my wife a little cash.
Oh, look. Yeah. Look who Keaton brought. There's whoever that is.
Okay,
oh.
Steve wants me to ask, could you ask Eric about how his cameo on Entourage came about?
Oh.
Well, I'm going to tell you. About the fourth time I heard them say my name, because I used to watch that show. I love that show. But about the fourth time I heard them say Eric Roberts, I called my attorney because he handles all those writers. I said, if they're going to talk about me, have them put me on the show. He goes, I'll call you right back. And he does. 5 minutes later, he calls him back. He goes, they want you on the show, but I got to ask you something. They want you on the show if you'll sell mushrooms. I said, no problem.
Yeah, you did.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
Eric, for people that don't, all these non-moviegoer types, and I'm just thinking about millennials and how things are so different. You got me kind of stirred up talking about Ingmar Bergman. You got to remember that same millennial, if you were to ask him, do you know who Johnny Carson is? They would not be able to answer that question.
That is so weird you say that. Guess what I watched last night?
Wait, Bob.
On some weird channel. Johnny Carson, because Orson Welles was on.
Oh, interesting. I find myself going on Facebook and watching lots of weird tapes like that. But there's the scary part. You could also ask them who Jay Leno is, and there's a good probability they won't know that.
I was going to say that. That's amazing. Because they forget right away.
Yeah.
It's the voice.
Right.
Yeah. They forget who was. They're like, oh, there's a million fans for this guy. But then they're gone, and they're there for the next season, even if it's a week later.
Or they just never knew. They just don't know. They don't know.
Isn't it weird? Like, I just retained everything. Like, I just was fascinated by it.
But those were your well, Keaton, do you know who Ingmar Bergman is? No offense?
Yes, of course I do.
Does that dog know who Ingmar Bergman is?
No, of course he doesn't. He doesn't need to. He doesn't have the problems that we have.
What is his name? Believe me, the dog's going to get more attention than any of us. So what is the dog's name?
He's a funny cat.
His name is Linus. There's Linus. Linus and Lucy's over there looking at me going, why is Linus getting all this attention right now? These are Kelly's.
Okay,
dogs.
So Kelly McGrath knows the Peanuts characters. Okay, that's pretty good because
well.
She's young.
Exactly.
There
she
we go.
She's a smart person. She understands culture. She knows the
she
history.
She distinguishes herself by
there,
doing that.
That's an interesting thing. What things are polygenerational? You know what really is? Sesame Street.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
Good point. Good point.
Different characters, but it should be.
It just goes round and round and round. That's all that's going on in my house right now. Sesame Street.
Good.
24/7.
That's a good testimonial to you as a dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great education.
It's one of my favorite characters on Sesame Street. Like, literally, I thought my dad was Guy Smiley.
Yeah.
I thought my dad was Bob. I just had no.
His sister was Prairie Dawn, and I call her Prairie now.
It was Prairie Dawn.
Yeah. It's just, Prairie Dawn. Was pre Elmo. They're new characters always.
No,
but
you get the original 70s versions.
Yes.
They're
that's
on
right.
the HBO bought them all. Yeah.
That's right. And there's even
and that's
video
one
games.
Great thing about corporate America. HBO bought all Sesame Street. You can watch it for free anytime. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Disney Sesame Street thing.
Some good stuff. Huh?
Yeah.
Just a little weird.
Has anybody seen this movie? I want to see the Jim Carrey, Andy Kaufman movie, the documentary. Have you seen it?
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Have you heard about it?
He plays Andy?
No, that's
a documentary about him playing Andy.
Yeah, right.
And all the
I'd love to
have
see
heard
it.
About
I've
it?
Heard about it, yeah. Because
it got put up on Netflix and it got taken down.
The first person to put Andy on television was Bert Dubrow. Dubrow,
oh, right, right, right.
In his little television station at his college in Boston.
Oh, wow. Don Kirshner's rock concert. When I was a young kid, that's where I got pregnant with him. I was producing Don Kirshner's rock concert. Yeah, did you know that? 9000 Building. For reals.
Wow.
And, suddenly David Yarnell said, maybe we should have comics. You know, they'll have to be unknowns because who's going to do our show, right? And I'm like, yeah, okay. And he brings in a few guys. Two of them, he's like, I saw two of the funniest guys today, but they have no act. I don't know if I should put them on, Robin Williams and Andy Kaufman. Yeah. And I was like, well, we got nobody else, so let's just do it.
Milton Berle wasn't available.
But we had David Letterman as a stand-up.
Really?
And we had, oh my God, we had Michael Keaton. Keaton, who else did we have? We had a couple other people who were amazing.
Did you have Steve Martin on that?
Oh, yeah, we had Steve Martin. That's right. We had some people.
Have you put it up on, speaking of online videos, have you got
to
put it up?
This is all this licensing stuff.
Well, no,
you know, but it's starting to come up.
Right? Okay. They're trying to
sell
it.
Monetize.
Yeah, monetize. Sure. But let me ask you a question. I've always wanted to know about that. Some bands seem to be live, and then some bands seem to be. So some people were really, like Peter Frampton was really playing live, it seemed like.
Yes.
But then Ohio Players were not playing.
That is correct. And
do you remember watching that?
Which?
The Don Kirshner's
rock concert. Sure.
Some were really live, and then some, because that's where I became aware probably at 13, 12, like, that's not real.
Right.
You know what I mean? The Milli Vanilli phenomenon.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that was a drug
that
thing, too,
lip-syncing.
Though.
That is
lip-syncing.
Because the Ohio Players were too drugged out.
We shot at the Aquarius Theater and Culver City Studios. Sometimes they didn't show up. We'd have to quadruple book, and sometimes they wouldn't show up. But then their managers would call the next day and go, oh, hey, sorry about that. You know. And what can we do? We want to be on TV.
Time.
Right. And then we'd say, like, well, maybe we could show a videotape. And they'd be like, that's cool. And we won.
You're just a professional addict. I would live in that
We always talk about the 70s. I loved the 70s. I was like, 15 in 1976. It was the greatest time to me.
Have you watched
Drew's a little older and hated it.
Did you watch The Deuce? Have you watched The Deuce yet?
No, I got to watch it.
The Deuce. That is what I hate about it right there. That's everything that I felt at the time. But
living in Palm Springs. It was kind of nice.
I understand that. That's my point. Let's take a call here. I can't really understand quite what the question is, but Kolut, is that your name?
Yeah, it's an Arabic name, so it's a bit tough.
Okay.
Beautiful name.
Welcome to the program. What can I do for you?
I was wondering if you watched Doug Stanhope's special 3 years ago.
Doug Stanhope's special.
Where he talked about you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Doug, you should know that I'm writing the foreword to his new book, and Doug and I have a new life together. So don't necessarily put too much into that particular video. But I will tell you that when he called me to write the preface to his book, I thought I was being punked. and he wrote about that in the book, that whole experience of. But we had had a lot of healing, he and I, before that. Anyway,
but so can I add my two?
I love Doug Stanhope, and you're going to have to read the book and read my foreword to understand how I reconcile all these things about my friend Doug Stanhope. So.
But that when that was going on, I just felt like there's something up with him. You know what I mean? When somebody's so affected by somebody else's decisions or choices in life.
Right, right.
Like, and this feeds into 45, which we are not going to talk about. But
right.
why that archetype or that what well, that him, person does bothers the we, person
you know why?
So much.
We actually did a podcast together. If you go to Dr.com, it's an old podcast, an old Dr. Drew podcast. He came out from Arizona and sat with me. And I didn't know all this was going on at the time. I heard some little rumblings that there was somebody really coming at me. And I learned that his mom was a recovering person. And she would drag him to these meetings, and he did deep resentment for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's part of what's going on. So that, my dear, is part of what the deal is. So that's a weird static sound we're getting.
Well, yeah, what's that static about?
What is
Wi-Fi?
It? Wi-Fi interference. Nice.
Which Wi-Fi?
All right. Let's. Here's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Take a break.
No, I don't want to take a break. Do we need to take a
Maybe
break?
This.
Miss Producer Susan?
Yeah. I wonder if
do
we
should. Need a break?
We'll take a break. And we'll
All right. We'll do a little break. We'll do a little break. Those of you on Facebook Live, keep asking us questions. We love having you. Those of you want to call in, thank
I'm
you.
I'm going to be honest. I need a nicotine gum break.
Okay. I figured there was something.
Are you still doing the gum? You've been doing the whole time I met you.
For
I
mean, 13 years I've been doing it.
Oh, God. My sister does that.
It's better than smoking. Way better. Okay. Give us a call, 323-649-8268. And Eric, when we come back, let's just go over your history, people that don't know.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You've got a great history. It'd be interesting just to sort of walk through some stuff. So, yeah?
Not going to do it.
No, you don't want to do it?
Of course he will. He's joking.
He hates talking about himself
right
now.
We'll talk about him.
We'll be right back.
We'll talk about you.
We'll be right back. All right, it is fall and your immune system is about to get tested, everybody. Not only does the changing weather mark the start of cold and flu season, it's also back to school time when kids become walking petri dishes. While catching something may be inevitable, there is no excuse for letting yourself get dehydrated in the process. So when you're wiped out with cold or flu, the first piece of advice always to drink plenty of fluids, but we seem to forget that. Now, once you've started feeling dehydrated, it's already too late for water or sports drinks. Rapid rehydration requires the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing gives this like Hydrolite. Hydrolite's formulation is based on established, proven science, and it is the simply best rehydration product I've found in this country. Hydrolite comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, and it's available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or what I prefer, those effervescence tablets. You just drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water. Off you go. It's like your own portable IV, but you can do it enterally. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-use, easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolite. Just click the banner on our site, drdrewhy.com, and use the code DrDrewHY, DrDrewHY at checkout. That is DrDrewHY. Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know what, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And, of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasted an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I've worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu. Keaton Simons. I want to comment really quickly about that commercial I read from Alliant. When I said the faculty is crazy, I don't mean they're crazy. I mean it's a crazy good, crazy good faculty. I mean they're insane. I mean they're crazy important people have worked at that facility, that organization.
They're smashing prices. They're...
So that okay, that's good. The music was Keaton Simon. And Keaton, congratulations. So where can people go again to get that?
You can get my music on iTunes if you want, or Amazon, or any of that kind of stuff. But if you just search Keaton Simons into the Google machine, it'll spit out some proper stuff.
There you go. Into the Google machine.
That's tough.
That's where we all live now.
Toss that in the laundry. You might get both socks back. Was that?
That's my. I'm just thanking people. I'm just throwing stuff at the wall. Hydrolite.
Can you believe a company that every human on the planet can deals with once or twice a day, minimally?
I know.
Yeah, Google.
It's amazing. Google. So here's the thing. I have this idea that we used to have Google in our minds, where all the information was stored, and then we went and we added information that we went and discovered in books or in conversation or in experiencing or listening. So I know if you Google Eric Roberts, it's going to pop. First thing that's probably going to pop up is Entourage.
Huh.
It's not going to be Star 80 or Pope of Greenwich Village. It's not.
Yeah.
Right, that's what's in Bob's Google mind. The first time I went to a movie theater and saw Pope of Greenwich Village, I was just like, "Oh my God, this is the new guy. This is the guy."
Thank you.
You know what I mean? There's only a few guys. It's like Brando, Pacino, De Niro, and then you were the new guy.
Dude, thank you.
That's how I felt.
It could be Celebrity Rehab. That's the first thing that pops
up. I'm looking at it.
Oh, my God. That would be so fucking sad.
No. I looked it up, and what comes up is the usual stuff.
It's life, buddy, life.
IMDb and Wikipedia and blah, blah, blah. So it's agnostic. So I'm going to go on the first thing that says Eric Roberts' list of movies and TV shows.
What's your biggest accomplishment?
Let me see what it says. It's TV Guide. This is TV Guide saying it. TV Guide's position is... It's just a chronological thing. So it's not as bad as you think, Bob.
Okay. But you picked one way down. But you know what I'm saying. It's just a method for
researching things now, basically. Because, you know, Google is like if you can't think of something, you're like, oh, I wonder, what was that thing? I at least personally don't, like, it has only served to enhance and increase my own internal knowledge and wealth of information, just because I then have it's easier and faster for me to research it. Otherwise, I'd have to go to a library, find it, do that. But I'd be doing essentially the same thing.
That's right.
But it's kind of a cheat sheet. I think YouTube, going on YouTube, is pretty amazing, right?
Mind-blowing.
You can see anything,
right?
Like if you know what to search for,
and
you know, you can just say Orson Welles on Johnny Carson show. There it is.
But why is it different from Googling?
Googling is just information. You're just getting the details, like the cliff notes. I always think of Google as cliff notes. And it's actually not objective, but subjective. Mm. Whoever wrote the Wikipedia and organized
it. Wikipedia is subjective. I don't know. For sure. I definitely have. That's one of the funniest things in the world to me. When I found out that Wikipedia is just like, because it had a bunch of shit of mine wrong and everything. Yeah, it was so funny. Why does this exist?
People throw stuff
and
on
Google's
there.
Just taking over the world.
I have lots of misinformation on all those sites.
Well, let's go over your history. Yeah, how did you go from movie wonk to star?
Well, I was at a very bad drama school in New York. And,
the one you were thrown out of?
Yeah,
that's why it's okay. Bad. did you know? So you knew you wanted to act
We need justice for Eric. It was horrible what happened to him there.
I was seen by a woman named Marion Doherty, who was the casting director of all time.
I saw a documentary on her or something.
Great?
Yeah, yeah.
She saw me, asked me to come to her office, so I did. And I got to her office, and I met Julia Taylor, who cast all the Woody Allen movies, the big movies she cast.
That's
where
I saw her. Yeah.
I met her, Nacita, Rick Nacita's wife at the time.
When was this?
Retro. Now, this is 1975.
And again, you always wanted to be an actor, or was this just a side thing and it started going? Or
no, I was very seriously pursuing it.
I had at
this time, since I started at 4, I did my first play at 4. I had already done like 88 plays or something, 90 plays.
All right, so you were way in.
Yeah, because I was in repertory theater, did the 5 to 8 plays every year, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
So that was my life. And then she brings me in for this TV. TV movie that I did not get. But they introduced me to my manager, who also handled at the time Chris Walken, Sissy Spacek, Tom Berenger, Tom Hulse.
So he saw him.
How did you get that manager?
Through Marion Daugherty and through Juliet Taylor.
Managers sort of pick their poisons, you know what I mean? He saw something. And you can't you find a manager. They find you,
right?
Sort of what happens.
And then they're sometimes the poison. I mean, it may end with them, right, their great taste, and then after that. Yes. But go ahead.
Well, he got me out. And auditioned, you know, for my first movie. And then after five more auditions, Frank Pearson told Dino De Laurentiis, here's a boy I want. He said, but he's unknown. He said, we'll have to screen test him. So he did. And after the screen test, I got the part.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then that started my career. It's basically, I don't want to belittle it, but there are a lot of good actors. I got very lucky. And I did get very lucky because it's all about right place, right time. Yes.
Yes, but.
And right role.
Yes, but.
And right role.
Yeah, I'm not a bad actor. But there's a lot of actors that are just as good and or better and or different where it's even more dynamic. But they didn't get lucky. I did. It was the right part, the right time. Susan Sarandon played my mom. You know, Brooke Shields played my sister. You know, Shelley Winters played my grandmother. Sterling Hayden to play my grandfather. I mean, it was an amazing cast.
That is amazing.
I was a rookie, and I was nervous every day, but I was in heaven.
I bet.
Yeah.
What do you think about luck?
Well, I was thinking the way he described his luck, you could say that about any field, any profession,
any
business endeavor, which is, yeah, there's probably somebody, let's just take somebody opens an ice cream store. Yeah, it's probably somebody who knew as much about ice cream and had maybe even some better flavors. But you have to be at a certain rarefied air, first of all, and have to be prepared, have to be ready. And I think there's sort of with acting, there's always this sort of, you know, unspeakable whatever the magic
is. I love the compliment. Right, I love the compliment, and I believe you in the compliment. Yeah. But there are also some actors who are lots bigger stars than I ever was or ever will be, who are really not very good.
Who don't have it. That's a fact.
That's luck.
I will leave them nameless.
But guess what? There are a lot of business people. But hang on. But there are a lot of business people out there that made fortunes that aren't good businessmen or business women. They just happen in on stuff.
Same difference.
There's
same
a idea. Lot of rehab.
Can you think of any offhand?
The actors or the business people?
Thank you, Keaton. No.
The business. Like a one prominent business asshole who's actually not good at anything.
Oh, lots of.
No, the thing is, there'll never be another you, my bro. That's how it works. Everybody is individual and unique. And so, of course, it's luck and it's this and it's that and the other thing. But it's... also you.
I wanted to talk about something really serious.
Better or worse is all relative. That's unique.
Let's talk about something really serious for a second. So Star 80, right? That was a character that was frightening and you consumed and lived inside of, right? And the reason why I point this out is when Heath Ledger did Joker, which is a comic book character.
Yeah.
Supposedly he couldn't get out of the character. He couldn't let it go.
I was there. That's not true.
Of course it's not true.
I was there.
Yes, of course it's not true. That
so
was our
point.
It was
made up for what? Just to explain?
It's fascinating. It's just woo. Yeah.
But did you, Star 80, was it hard for you? That was a consuming character.
Well, here's where I was saved.
Right now I'm scared. Just thinking of that guy. That was a frightening guy because he could be your next door neighbor or your brother-in-law.
Yeah.
That's what was frightening about it.
Told the story before, so if you've heard it out there, I apologize. But really, really quick, one day I was having trouble with a scene with Bob Fosse. I was in my underwear with a guitar, and I screwed up the song, and I said, cut. You don't say cut on a Bob Fosse set unless you're Bob Fosse. So he said, come here. And he walks across this huge sound stage of Zoetrope, and he walks to the other side of it. Come here. So I go over there in my underwear with my guitar. Yes. He says, look at me. I said, I'm looking at you. Look at me. I said, I'm looking at you, man. He goes, okay. You're playing me if I weren't successful. Do you understand?
Wow.
I mean, that's about as...
That's pretty intense right there, if anybody knows. See, now people have to Google Bob Fosse, and it's going to take them time to catch up.
That's about as personal a direction as you can give somebody. Yeah. And I knew him, you know, pretty well. So on the way back to set, I watched how he walked. I basically played him the rest of the movie.
Did all that jazz capture him at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure.
That's a movie. You want to watch a movie about Bob Fosse. That's a good one. Yeah. So, with what's the actor's name?
Showtime.
Paul Schrader.
Showtime.
I mean, Schneider.
No, Schneider. The guy from Jaws.
I got confused with Star 80.
Roy Scheider.
Roy Scheider, not Paul Schneider. Roy Scheider.
Paul Schneider was my character,
right.
Yeah, but does that answer whether you ever snapped out of it or not?
Was it hard to get out of?
No. I just followed his direction. I was in his lap artistically. Tell me what to do like a puppet. I will do it. And he would talk me through stuff. He would send me to set ready to do it, whatever it was.
He was acting, I think. I mean, yeah. My experience with Eric is if he's reading a book, he's very influenced 24 hours a day by what's going on in the book. And it'll take him somewhere and he can't get out of it. Whereas I haven't seen him be that way with his characters. Wow. Maybe earlier in the career.
The only character you saw that happened with was It's My Party. And you commented on it.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of true.
And you commented on it. You said, you're not the same guy married.
Let's take some calls here, guys. This is Claudia. Let's get her up here. It takes a little bit of a second. Claudia, you with me?
Yeah, hi.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, I have been dying to ask you about this, Dr. Drew, and it's actually it's kind of serendipitous that Eric is there as well, because I can bring him in on this. I'm actually a huge fan of both of yours, Eric and Dr. Drew.
Thank you, Dan.
But I saw you, Dr. Drew, on Hollywood Medium with Tyler Henry, and it showed a clip of you before the reading of you saying, I don't quite know how to explain this, but what I can tell you is I'm sure that Tyler is not speaking with spirits. And then I saw you and your wife receive quite a reading, it seemed. It seemed like you were kind of blown away.
Yeah, I was.
So my question to you would be, how do you, if you really do not believe that he's speaking with spirits, how do you reconcile that?
And then my other part
of the question to Eric would be, is that I saw you, Eric, on Celebrity Ghost Stories, and I saw about your car accident when you were very young in your career and what happened in the hospital, and that was very, very intriguing. So you apparently, from what I gather, haven't... conflicting opinion with Dr. Drew. You seem to be a believer.
Let me give mine
as
first.
As am I. And I'd like to hear the two of you.
Slow up.
What your beliefs are.
Okay, slow your
roll. She's trying to start a fight, Doc.
Right. No, this won't be a fight. Right. But first of all, I'm married to First Lady of Love, who is, you know, has all her friends are psychics. I get to watch what they're doing. And the comedy in that Tyler Henry thing was me going, hey, one thing I know for sure is they're not talking to dead people. She's like, they're talking to dead people. I'm like, no, they're talking to dead people. So that was, you know, I was playing with that a little bit, to be fair. But I do come from the position where I have to, you know, I have to evaluate what I can evaluate. And I don't, doesn't make any sense to me that this is actually talking to dead people. What does make sense to me, and I've looked very carefully at the people that do this work, is that they're doing, that a lot goes on between and amongst people that we are not consciously aware of. A lot.
Right.
And I've had weird experiences in therapeutic settings, both as a patient and as somebody trying to support somebody, where weird things and music and all kinds of stuff has happened to me that I can't explain. It wasn't mine. It was something I was creating with the patient. And that to me leads to two conclusions. One is there are probably people that do it a hell of a lot better than me, that can really pull things out of other people's whatever we're sharing together. And it might be some collective. I don't know what it is, but it's something. I prefer to think of it, because I'm a scientist, as the right side of our brain is loaded with all kinds of stuff that some people can kind of tune into. The other thing is I believe that consciousness itself is at least a two-brain phenomenon. It's a co-creative phenomenon. So it makes sense to me that we leave parts of ourselves on other people's brains, and very intuitive people may be able to pull that out in some way. So that's how I explain it. I may be wrong. That's how I understand it. My wife thinks they talk to dead people, right? Talk to dead people? Yeah. Here she comes.
Yes, I do.
I am open-minded enough to be proven wrong in any way possible. In the meantime, I temporality and time are different things. Maybe I don't know. There's all kinds of things that our brains can't explain. This brain was developed on the savannas to help us, you know, out run and kill buffalo. So of course there are things we're not aware of with using this instrument. But Eric, go ahead.
Sir, what do you think?
I do not disagree with you about a thing that you've said.
Yeah.
But I also think this vessel runs on energy. It's been proven scientifically you cannot kill energy. You can only disperse it. So the energy goes somewhere. So it doesn't die with the vessel. So that's what I believe. I don't know where it goes or what it does, but I'm open to all the possibilities.
Right.
Yeah.
So more to be revealed, Claudia, but thanks for the question. Are you satisfied?
I think so. Well, everything that you said, I completely agree with. I think I'm totally on board with that. But it seems odd to me that you can be okay with that, but not with a medium connecting with a spirit that has passed from this realm.
I am not okay with it. I'm saying that I can't. I'm a scientist. I can't make sense of that. But if somebody can prove it to me, there's a scientist. What is this guy's name? He's actually a biologist. He's kind of a super controversial guy. But
Google.
I can't remember his name right now. Aging brain. But listen, I'm open minded, my dear. It just doesn't make good sense to me yet, and we'll see. I mean,
let me tell you a way I see it. Yeah. So there are certain people, especially Keaton can understand this, in the idea that are in touch with the ideas world is how David Lynch talks about it.
Right.
He got a vision of a girl who's killed drowning in her lake.
Right.
Right. And then he spent most of his life trying to figure out what that idea was, right, which is Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan claims he doesn't know who wrote Blowing in the Wind.
Oh, wow.
Right? They just come from some other world. Right, some people are attuned to that
But then recovery, some people completely feel like it's coming from outside.
Yeah.
So we as humans.
So people are in tune for the arts in ways that normal people are not.
Right.
And I believe that I believe this Tyler Henry. I watch him. He's pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, you're doing
some of it is just staged TV and phony, and I can tell.
Yeah.
But some of it is mind blowingly real.
Yeah.
Right? And I think he's just one that can get in tune with that other thing.
Well, I've been asked to do his show.
You should do it. He does this frontal releasing thing. He does this thing with his hand like this, which means he's releasing his left frontal lobe, so the right frontal lobe, sort of the right side, is released. So he can just be in that part of his brain.
Oh, really?
Plus, he's really cool and cool. And
he sweats. He sweats like a maniac.
Does he really?
He sweats through our furniture, which to me means his body
is working.
No, his body's engaged in some way.
Oh, wow.
And that's part of the right brain stuff. So,
metabolism and
it's autonomic. His autonomic nervous system is turned on, quite literally. Not his.
FYI, Alec Baldwin is a big sweater, too.
and nobody's ever accused him of being intuitive.
He's working hard. Internally, we have another hard.
We have another Facebook page.
He's
for
a great
you guys.
Guy, by the way.
I'm sure Alec thanks you for that.
When it comes to
thanks, Eric.
Four suits every scene.
Great sweaters of our time.
My only question about ghosts, and I'm not talking about communicating with a consciousness that exists outside of our physical consciousness. My only question is, are the clothes ghosts too? So I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and my shorts are also a ghost?
Yeah.
I know. I wonder that too.
Yeah, why am I not naked?
That doesn't make any sense.
Why am I not naked?
It's a good one. Go ahead, Drew.
All right, here's a Facebook post. When it comes to affected family members, the entourage surrounding someone struggling with addiction, have you heard of Kraft Method, which pertains to family behavior modification? It's been featured in HBO, huge.
Well, it happens organically anyways. I know about that a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit myself too.
So there's a thing called the identifiable patient.
Right.
And when that person decides to get well, the dysfunction kind of either eats on itself or they put somebody else in the identifiable patient. I've seen it a thousand times.
Right.
I saw it in my own family where I was always the black sheep.
Right.
You know, always. Right. Oh, Bobby, they used to say. Oh, Bobby.
now I say it.
Right. So I wasn't there anymore. I'm like sober guy, good guy, trying to help guy.
Right.
And so they put my nephew in there who passed away from drugs.
Oh, no.
Then they put my second nephew in there. He survived it and got his life together. Mm-hmm. And it, you just watch the dysfunction. Unless the people decide to get well as a whole or get inspired to learn and grow, it'll just always stay the organism that it is.
Yeah.
Right. Although sometimes somebody in recovery shakes it up enough that people start looking at stuff. And this emailer or this Facebook post was about, you know, therapeutic processes where you can help.
That's what I'm saying. They've got to sign up for it. This is just another version of signing up for whatever.
This is the conundrum in all mental health and anything, where it's spiritual or mental health or cognitive change.
Right.
You have to really want to do it. It's not hard to change. It's very not easy to change our brains. It is really hard.
And I always say, everybody says, oh, the drug addicts, it's so sad and it's so hard for them. Actually, we get ourselves into a corner where it's a pretty natural decision. Like in my case, I was going to go to jail.
You have to either die or come out of it.
Yeah. You're going to either figure it out or you're going to perish.
Yeah.
Right.
The codependents or the dysfunctional family members or the ignored Marcia, Jan Brady types, what is their motivation to get help and grow and change? They have to get to that pain place that the addict does. Yeah. And I don't think just because you have an addict in your life is enough pain to want to change.
Yeah.
I just have watched tens
of you never
thousands.
Had me in your life.
The addict, exactly. No, I agree with you though, Bob. I mean, I think you're totally right about that. You need to come upon it yourself. And a lot of times, if people allow their egos to get in the way, then the Jan Brady syndrome becomes like, well, now I'm going to have a little bit of spotlight and attention. You know what I mean? Right. Now that, like, why is all this attention being put on this other person?
It's so That's funny. I'm
I
fascinated.
A lot of family members resent the addict for that reason because they get all the damn attention.
Yeah. You know? But I'm fascinated by the Jan Brady. We all know what we're talking about. Multi-generationally, we know what we're talking about. Right. And it's a lie. Yeah. Jan was a whiny baby, self-pitying. Yeah. That's why she was repulsive. And Marcia was just so nice to everybody. Marcia was so nice to everybody, and she was great. It wasn't because she was more attractive. It was because she was a nice person, and Jan was a self-pitying person.
That's
why there's the Jan Brady phenomenon.
And that's probably why there's Maureen's book, too, right? Just to
you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Think of the Jan Brady thing is the one.
Think of the psychopathology of the characters
in Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch.
Oh, it was profound. Right. And it was all glossed over as idealized.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least it was out there, and we could all observe it and take it for what we thought.
Well, there was another dynamic there, because, you know, Chris Knight came to me one day. Keaton was a little boy.
They're very good friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, Chris came. He's like, I'm Peter Brady, so I'm never going to act again. So I got to do something. How about casting? And he became my $50 a week intern in our house where we're casting. We discovered Keanu Reeves, who auditioned on a Cookie Monster chair in my daughter's room with Keaton's racing car bed.
And, my race car bed and the Cookie Monster
chair. And he remembers it. Casey Reeves was his name at the time. But Chris was, and the thing that would happen is people come into audition and they were completely, I make everybody calm. I want them to, no nerves. We work on that. And they were terrified. They're like, I'm auditioning for Peter Brady. You know, lamb chops and applesauce. What was it? Pork chops and applesauce.
Oh, there were
so much so that the network, it was a big conundrum. What should we do about Peter Brady being at the thing?
Because he's so famous.
But he told us things about
an icon who can't find a job.
Right, exactly. Well, there you go. Florence's kids were very threatened by the Brady kids because their mom was their mom and spent all that time there. There was a lot going on every level.
It was mind blowing because I knew that the father of Florence Henderson's character had died, right?
Right.
But what happened to the mother of the dad? They never even explained it. I'm kind of a Brady Bunch fanatic. Yeah.
Obviously.
Kristen. I don't know.
And
Partridge
Family.
I didn't know that the Florence. You know what? It's so funny because as a kid, like, I watched it, I guess, only in reruns, but it was. I never even wondered what happened to the natural biological.
Well, because you grew up in Hollywood where there's five marriages in a row.
Never thought of that.
Maybe they did like soap operas when they want to get rid of a storyline on soap opera. Like there was one recently, a friend of ours, where she just went upstairs to wash her hair and you never saw her again. Nobody mentioned her. They were just done with that storyline. It's like,
it happened to, that's what's her name? We had one patient that it happened to her. She was on the Cosby's for a minute and she went upstairs one day and didn't come down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let me explain the craft program, just to get back to the,
craft.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We is a sort of, it's kind of a behavioral intervention program to help
on the whole family,
to help motivate the patient into and through treatment. That's the idea. But I would just say, generally speaking, it almost doesn't matter what technique you use. If you engage everybody and you, you know, then you, and you're a empathic therapist, you can get a lot of work done.
Of course you can.
A lot of work done. So, but craft has been something that's sort of, it was outs for a while, now it's kind of back a little bit. So,
okay.
Yeah, about that.
But you're supposed to get help yourself. Go to Al-Anon, get help yourself.
Yeah, of course.
And well, but the this is more about, the goal of this is a little, of the craft is more about getting the identified person into and through treatment.
Oh.
So it's a different goal.
And for the family not to sabotage with their
and
own.
And just to change the way they interact with that person, which is really what Al-Anon's about too, what a good therapy would be about. So it really kind of, it's so funny. There's a guy
that's
named.
What most treatment centers used to do.
I know. No, there's a guy named Peter Fonagy that he's interested in what makes, you know, certain therapeutic interventions work. He's developed something called mentalizing therapy, and he went out and did a study, or he was involved with somebody that did, and he said they went looked all over Great Britain for the person that had the best outcomes, and he just found this little woman in the Cotswolds that had great outcome, and she was not that well trained, but she had deep empathy, and everybody got well when they sat with her.
Really? Wow, that's
a great story that is all by itself.
Yeah,
and that team is so much more miraculous than a ghost flammable spirit.
I agree with you that they're related. You see, I think that's
one is a mistaken interpretation of the other.
Yep.
Just like everything, just like the sunrise. You don't know what the hell it is. You go, please, Lord, Sun, don't smite me. You know?
There's two or three songs I just heard there. Please pray those for us. I think people do hear songs. They don't hear us talking about things. They hear songs. Please do so.
Yeah, write those songs, Keaton.
That's what I'm doing.
We're getting close on time here. I see some callers coming up here that I want to try to get to.
We love callers.
They're sort of getting screened and uploaded. Our system's a little bit on the slow side. But our callers have been very good today.
It's nice you have callers. We had a show. We never had any callers unless we went in the other room and called. Except we did once when we had a religious filmmaker on. He came. I mean, like, we couldn't even do the show. Well, everybody called. Man.
Religion is a, you know, you're talking about religion. People get
it's a big audience draw.
People get
religion
people
and
get,
politics. That's what we try to stay away from here.
Yes.
But people get exorcised about this.
Yes, that's right.
So with that, I'll say goodbye to you guys. Susan, is that about right timing? Yeah. Okay. Eric, it's such a privilege to see
you. We love you, Drew. We love you, Bob.
Eliza,
we love you, Nate.
I'm honestly, guys.
Nobody ever speaks to Nate. Poor
Nate
holds us all together.
Behind the board.
Nate's behind the board. Nate's always been working with us here at these podcasts.
100 in a row.
Cannot do them without him. And you and Nate had a life before us, right?
Yeah, yeah. Forever. So, me and Nate forever.
That's very strange. That's Nate and Bob forever. See?
It's on a tree somewhere.
It's like 20. How long has it been? Like 20 years? 15 years.
So,
wow.
Bob and Nate.
All right. Well, again, anything else you guys want to plug out there, or phone numbers or websites or anything? Keaton got
Natural Child. Always look up Natural Child.
Naturalchild.org.
That's
naturalchild.org. All of us are involved.
Pie Bake Shop.
Yep.
There it is.
Pie Bake Shop. He's
wearing
nice. His shirt.
Well done, man.
PI Bake Shop. That's his sister, Prairie Dawn's.
Prairie
Dawn. Not only are all of y'all involved in Natural Child, you've got him involved with it too, clearly.
I know.
How wonderful.
Yeah. How great is that?
Yeah.
And him, he's playing at Rockwood in New York. And he's playing,
I'm reading the books on audio.
He's the audiobook guy.
Fantastic. Yeah, he's the voice.
Yep.
All right, you guys, we'll wrap it up with that, and thank you, everybody.
Love you.
Wait. Susan wants me to read something.
Stuff. You got to read your outro.
Oh, my goodness. All right, here we go.
We've got a lot of people giving a lot of
stuff. Here we go. So Keaton Simons, SIMNOS.com, PieBakeShop.com, PI, NaturalChild.org. I'm not sure I got the org out there.
Yes.
And, of course,
nonprofit, if you didn't know.
This is also available from this particular show, iTunes, Podbean, for all of you who enjoy the podcast, on Monday, September 25th. Google hashtag You Will Live, and it will be there for you. Is that right? What does that mean, Susan? You mean you Google hashtag you live and you'll find
it'll
the iTunes
up everywhere.
Everything will pop up.
Okay.
Wow.
Hashtag you will live.
Also, YouTube/DRDREW. Dr. Drew, this has been a video feed tomorrow, as well as other shows we've done here with UBN.
She writes his dialogue like you write mine.
That's very, yeah. It's just a, it says it in the way that she wants it to be actually said. Right? Or just go to
Dr. You can't ad-lib that, that documentation.
No, no. Or just go to Dr.com, find all the podcasts, including a new show we're going to do with Ami Horowitz called The Howard Vortex. We go into some in-depth interviews with the Whack Packers of the Stern Show. Yes, we do.
Wow. Well, oh, I want to be around that one.
So, High-pitch Eric is our first subject.
We could go another hour. You've been on Stern a lot.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
A lot. Oh, yeah.
I did Stern 4 times.
You really let it all hang out.
No.
He
tries to get me to let it all hang out.
That's right. Stern is like
he's
like,
just not afraid of the stuff that we're all, or he's not afraid to talk about the stuff that we're all afraid of and afraid to talk about.
Howard or Eric?
Yeah, but it would never occur to me to talk even think about taking a shower with my sister, and that's all he wants to talk about. It's like. I don't go there, dude. No, come on. Let's talk about taking a shower with your sister.
But when he does stuff like that, you know what he's doing.
Let's don't, right? Howard. I know. But it's like, come on. Let's talk about something real, Howard.
Not Stern. I meant you, Eric. I meant you talk about things, not Stern. I was saying you are willing to talk about things that we're all afraid to talk about, well, like death and things. You know what I mean? The stuff that we all have in common, but we're also have in common that we're afraid to talk about.
Well, that's the truth. Knowing your stuff the other way I do. Do you ever stick to script of when you're out promoting something? You probably never do, do you? Do you even mention the product you're promoting?
That's Eliza's headache.
The past 5 years of my life. It took her about 22 years to train me. But the past 5 years of my life, I've been sticking to script everywhere we go. And she's so proud of me, too. She kisses me and stuff on the forehead.
Really, that's why I'm still alive.
So see, that's why you have to be here. Oh, okay. To keep it going in the right direction.
All right, you guys. Thank you so much. Everybody, we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
I'll be home again before you know it. All this careful thought has left you stoic. I believe it's snowing on the East Coast. I'll be going, but I heard that it's snowing out in Malibu. Babe, can you believe it's snowing out in Malibu? When I'm thinking of you, my love, I feel like anything is possible. When you're back in my arms again, I know that we will be unstoppable. It must be hard to be with me sometimes. Always trying to see behind my eyes. I believe the sun is on the rise again. Should get rolling if I'm gonna catch my flight this afternoon. You know I really should be on that flight this afternoon. When I'm thinking of you, my love, I feel like anything is possible. When you're back in my arms again, I know that we will be unstoppable. One look, one night, one lonely touch, the dark, the light. I miss you too much. What's wrong? What's right? It's never enough. No, it's never enough. No. When I'm thinking of you, my love, I feel like anything is possible. When you're back in my arms again, I know that we will be unstoppable. You know that we will be unstoppable.